Welcome to the home of Blood, Sweat, and Words, a podcast that empowers writers. My name is Joanne Carson. I'm a fiction and nonfiction author, blogger, and podcaster, and I'm trying to make sense of the writing world today. My weekly show is current, relevant, and above all, honest. Join me, and we'll talk it to the bone. That's what Blood, Sweat, and Words is all about. My personal update. How are you doing with your New Year's resolutions? I've sunk my first one already. Or maybe it's more apt to say it sunk me. My number resolution this year was to eat more vegetables. What could go wrong, right? I should be able to ace this one, right? Well, I decided one way to accomplish my goal was to drink more green smoothies. So I downed a classic book on the subject, loaded my fridge with green stuff, and got out my blender. The result? Gross green liquid. And besides that, I've had a bad stomach for 3 days. I'm not sure my body has the operating manual for digesting raw vegetables mixed with fruit. But I will not give up on my resolution. I'll just ease off the green brew for a while. I hope you're managing your grand plans with a little more success than I have. My two WIPs, works in progresses, are inching along as I fall back into routines. I'm really excited about my as yet unnamed paranormal cozy mystery. It's great fun playing with that structure. My podcast book has come back from my 3 beta readers with lots of excellent comments that I'm working through one by one. Talking about podcasts, I interviewed Christine Monroe at Kobo last week, and her episode will air next month. Being able to talk to experts in the field is exciting. And of course, I have new creative projects bubbling in my head. My latest is to start a second podcast aimed at my reading audience. I won't say more than that. That's my personal update. And now to today's episode with Donna Barker. This is episode 21, and I'm with Donna Barker today. Welcome, Donna.
Hello, Joanne.
Let's get right into this. You call yourself an author igniter. What does that mean?
It's a little a play. Well, what it means is that one of the things that I do, one of the hats I wear, is that I help other writers kind of push past their blocks and get back to their writing. So I ignite the fire under them. And part of the little play for me was that for 5 years I was a volunteer firefighter. So, and my husband still is a volunteer firefighter. So the whole theme of fire in my house is quite, it's a popular theme around here.
And it's a great image. I love the image.
Well, thank you.
Tell us about your writing background.
I did a degree in communications, and so that required a whole lot of writing. And thought that I was going to become a documentary filmmaker, but back 30 years ago, it was not the same kind of, there wasn't that same kind of ease with becoming a filmmaker. You didn't have video cameras. Everyone was working with, you know, expensive equipment and expensive tape or film. So I found myself working in the not-for-profit sector, which was a really good fit for me. And, you know, it's a great fit for someone who's passionate about change, which documentary filmmakers are. And I became a ghostwriter. So I worked basically in organizations. My writing was solid, and I just happened to land jobs working for organizations like the David Suzuki Foundation and Oxfam Canada and a couple of arts organizations, and then eventually helped found an organization which no longer exists, but it was a consulting and a training organization for other not-for-profit staff to help them with their communications. So ghostwriting, writing for other people, writing for magazines, writing on behalf of them has been something I've been doing. And it's the best job in the world because it's like being paid to be a perpetual student. And I've been doing it now on contract for, well, since January 2002. So that's when I left salaried positions because I just wanted to pursue all the different fun ideas that I could learn about. And that's what I get to do.
Well, that sounds really exciting. So your passion is about making a change in the world then, as well as helping other writers. Am I getting that right?
100%, and they're a perfect complement because I really see that books, even fiction, even it doesn't matter what genre you're writing. My passion is truly nonfiction. That is what I do the majority of my reading in. But even fiction, when we write, the stories that we're telling are, well, they're changing us. I mean, you know that. Like we write from a place in our hearts where when we're writing stories that we care about and about topics we care about, and we put those things into fiction and the nonfiction we write. So I really believe that every story that there is to tell has some amount of social change element in it. And that, so that's the piece that's really been consistent through all of the work I've done.
So then, when you're helping ignite the fire under authors, you're looking for that fire that they're playing with in their story and bringing it out.
Well, and this is a really interesting thing because, in fact, one of the books that I'm working on right now, I'm working on two of them, but one of them is, may I? I'm going to quote Anne Lamott. So
Oh, I
hopefully
like her.
that's okay. Well, I mean, it's just, she's the first person that I'm aware of in her book Bird by Bird who penned Shitty First Draft, right?
Right.
And so I'm working on a book with the Creative Academy called Your Shitty First Draft, and it's all around the brain science because I love neuroscience and how our brains help us and hinder us. And I was working on a section on this Monday, in fact, just a couple of days ago, and it was all about the research behind whether our passion or our purpose is where we should focus our time, particularly when you're stuck, working on that first draft. And the book is called Your Shitty First Draft, but that's the only time I refer to it as that because I really like to think of our first drafts as scrappy, rough drafts. They're fighters. You got them in a corner and they're going to come out fighting and we're going to put a suit on them by the end of it. They're not going to be that little, scrappy guy in the back alley.
But they keep
But
fighting no matter what.
they do keep, but they sure do. So that whole idea of passion versus purpose, and I found some really interesting research that's quite overwhelming. It comes from management studies, but it shows that people who focus on their passion typically are less committed, less productive. They produce lower results, like in a work context, than people who focus on doing work that feels purposeful. And I don't know if you want me to go into the details of it. That's interesting, but there's a little grid. Actually, I'll stop. Do you want me to just tell you what the difference
Yeah,
between
you can't stop
okay.
now.
Okay, good. I don't know, because I get so excited about this stuff. I just like, this is great because people talk about this idea of passion so often, and I so rarely hear about saying like people talking about, so is the work you're doing purposeful? And when we're writing, because there are so many times where it can be, disheartening, and there's so many times when people want to quit. I was thinking, okay, so we talk about passion. What about this idea of purpose? So these management consultants, or this PhD, went and did the biggest study that's been done on passion versus purpose. And what I found, these are the numbers. They had bosses rank their employees and how good their employees were. And then they had the employees rank themselves on these only the two criteria: how high is your passion, how high is your purpose. And the employees who said that they had a low passion and low purpose, no surprise, their bosses ranked them in the 10th percentile. So you wonder why they're even in those jobs, right? The bosses
Right.
think they're doing a crappy job, they don't like it. The ones who have high passion and low purpose, now the assumption was that these folks would do really well, but they self-declared high passion, low purpose. Their bosses said, overall, like this is an average, they were in the 20th percentile. So they weren't doing that great. But when you hit the flip it around, and the people who said, well, the job feels like very purposeful to me, I'm not really passionate about it, but it's high purpose, their bosses ranked them on average in the 63rd percentile. And then, of course, the high purpose, high passion, you're up at the 80th percentile. So those are the really high performers. So when we're thinking about working on books, if we can think about the piece that is the purpose for us, why we're writing this particular book, for instance, this topic has meaning to me because, as opposed, and for some it might just be, Semantics, passion and purpose, but they are quite different. You know, passion is quite internal. Purpose has an external meaning to it.
So it's like looking for the high concept in the story. Like, it's not just a story, but there's a high concept in there.
Yeah. And it's like your own high concept too. Like,
yeah.
What is it that you're hoping to achieve with this book that is outside of yourself? What is your purpose here? So,
Well, fascinating. I think that study sounds really interesting. Getting back to you, you said your first book took 10 years to complete. Can you tell us about that journey?
Sure.
Without crying.
It's an interesting thing. We'll see if I can do it. I had, you know, so many authors say, I've always wanted to write a book. It was on my list since I was 5 years old. I never had that desire to write a book. Like I said, I was interested in the documentary film side. But in November 2005, my marriage came to a sudden end, quite unexpected. And one of the ways that I processed what was going on was I started to write a blog, which is kind of ridiculous, but I did. And it was called Shattering Rose-Colored Glasses.
Oh.
And so I was, and oh, and the other piece was that because my husband had left me for another woman, even though all of the experts and so on said, well, you know, you should really take a month to heal for every year you were married, which would have given me 14 months of healing. I gave myself about 14 days and I thought, if you can fall in love while you're still married to me, well, heck, I can start dating because I was still, you know, it was a shock. This was not an expected thing for me. So it was a really, all the way around, it was really dumb. But people connected with this blog, and some fool said I should write a book. And so I started that process about a year later, so around the end of 2006 or January 2007. And I don't remember how long it took me to write the manuscript, but I wrote it in first person, and it was very memoirish, and it was awful, right? It was the scrappiest rough draft. There were good stories, there were entertaining stories, but I was still angry, I was still hurt, and I recognized that by the time I'd finished that draft. So I rewrote it again in the third person to make it feel less personal. And at that stage, I started to fictionalize the events to make it more of a story, mm-hmm. Less of a diary. Mm-hmm. And I hated it. It was so detached. Like, the third person just didn't work for me. So I don't even know, but probably another 18 months had gone by. I wrote it again in the first person. And it turns out, like, I am a first-person writer. That is the way I feel most comfortable, even when I'm writing fiction now. And I added even more fiction. So at this point, it was fiction. There was still little seeds of my real story in there, but it was fiction. And I took those first 20 pages of what was at that point 110,000-word manuscript.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
So huge. And I submitted the first 20 pages to the Vancouver Manuscript Intensive in January 2012, and shockingly was accepted, which meant I paid $2,000 to work one-on-one with a developmental editor.
Oh.
So basically, at this point, it had been 5 years since I started. And this developmental editor and I worked on the novel for five or six months, probably. It was to the beginning of the summer. And at the end, truly, there were still so many significant problems. The very last thing she said to me was, you know what, you have to decide, is this a novel with a standard character arc? And, you know, is your main character going to grow from beginning to end? And or is it a series of short stories? And part of the problem was that there wasn't enough character growth. She wasn't much different from beginning to end. So I thought, oh, okay, there's my first draft. That is, at that point, I joined a writer's community, and I'd learned that lots of first manuscripts end up living under the bed forever. And I thought, okay, maybe that's the one that lives under the bed. I've learned a lot. And I was, you know, toying with the idea of not writing fiction at all, and just going back to writing nonfiction, you know, just doing my career thing. But in November of 2012, if anyone is familiar with American politics, a couple of things happened. The U.S. elections were taking place, and that was Obama's second election. And then my dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and he said that his one regret was that he'd never written a book. And so he said that the U.S. elections were going on. I am quite passionate, social change. These knuckle-brained U.S. politicians were quoted saying things like, some girls rape easy, and you can't get pregnant if you didn't enjoy the sex, and I went off my, you know, nut on that one. And so with my dad needing kind of an accountability coach, and with me having this passionate idea, which was still on similar themes, like the first draft of that book that lives under my bed, which I was, this is all you need to know. It tells you everything about it. Drinking scotch with strangers, my year of dating dangerously. Right. So
that was good title.
Yeah. So the theme of these politicians and men in general being sometimes not very respectful to women became the theme of Mother Teresa's Advice for Jilted Lovers. And my dad and I co-wrote, like, we didn't co-write, we wrote at the same time. He wrote his book and I wrote my book, and we were accountability buddies, and we got our rough drafts done at around the same time, mid-2013, and then he got too sick to keep working on his. So, you know, all in all, I went through all the normal self-confidence challenges, and but I hired a developmental editor. She's Eileen Cook, fantastic. And she helped me whip that first draft into shape. And then my dad died. And that killed all my desire to work on it.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Anyway,
but,
I had put it away.
What a wonderful experience that you got to write with your dad. I mean, that's really precious.
It really, truly was. And he was my first reader. And my book, I mean, it's like 101 different ways to kill a man. And, you know, it's like, my dad, how are you coming up with these horrible ways to kill men? Because, you know, there were never any guns or knives or anything. It was things like, there's just silly things. It's dark humor. It's very dark humor.
But women can relate to that so well, because if they're having a bad time, it's dark humor is great.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And then, yeah, it is. Yeah.
So now you coach other authors. What does that entail?
A lot of it entails talking people off the cliff. So they're, for the most part, in the one-on-one coaching I do, it's typically writers who are still not yet calling themselves authors. They haven't published, and even though I believe they can legitimately claim that title while they're in progress, they're often not even able to call themselves a writer. So a lot of what I do is encouraging. And for instance, I have one client right now who it's accountability and motivation coaching, and there's a lot of confidence building involved. And one of the things she said is, okay, I want to hire you to help me get this book done. She had done one of my courses called Book on Fire, and she did that a year ago, and she made progress in the course, and then when the course ended, she stopped. And so she said, I want to hire you. And I said, okay, are you one of those writers who needs to get checked in with every day? And she said, absolutely. Are you one of those writers who will say, I wrote 1,000 words because that was my commitment, even if you didn't? And she said, yes. So because I know those writers, because I have been one of those writers. And so I said, okay, so she has to, for instance, with that particular writer, she has a commitment. She has to send me between 4,000 and 5,000 words every week. That is her choice. And I'll read the words and give her both, you know, the feedback that she needs to hear, which is both as an artist to make hers is a memoir in this particular case, to make it stronger, but also the words she needs to hear to keep going. So that's kind of what that entails. So that's one. Like, there are other writers that I work with, authors will just need to say, I want to send you an email 3 times a week, and like set a commitment, and you can just cheer me on. And like, really, it's that, it can be that simple, and they will make progress.
But profound. So yeah. Basically, you're working on accountability and motivational coaching.
Yeah, and there's some develop. I have some developmental editing clients as well, but not in fiction. I'm not skilled at doing that with fiction, just with nonfiction.
Awesome. And if you had one tip for writers out there, what would it be?
I would say join a community. Find a community to support you. So even if it's a community of only one person who gets what it takes to be a writer, the struggle with the inner doubt, and then once you're actually sharing your work, for instance, with agents or even with beta readers, it's, you know, how to deal with the objections and the unfavorable comments that you might get from readers. So find those people. You know, there's an African proverb. I can't never remember if it goes, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Or if it's the other way around.
Yeah, but, no, that's nice. Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah. But I don't think it works for writers, because I think if you want to go fast, go together. If you can find that community who will boost you up when you feel like quitting, mm-hmm. then you'll get there faster, because you won't be allowed to quit. You'll have other people saying, no, that, yeah, I know it feels like you're never going to get through this middle part. You will. Trust me. I've done it. And so I kind of like, you know, if as a writer, if you want to go fast, go together. And if you want to go far, by all means, go together. So it's about having people around you. That's my biggest tip.
Oh, and I totally agree. And you're part of the Creative Academy, which is a writing group in itself, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So three authors, Crystal Stranahan, who writes as CJ Hunt, and Eileen Cook, and myself, started the Creative Academy. As it's an online community that supports writers at all stages. Each of us has a very different, we all have a lot of overlap, but we have one area where we are particularly focused, and mine is definitely on the motivation, accountability, and that the piece that comes before you get your first draft done. And Eileen is a exceptionally skilled editor, so she will work, and I mean, we all do blue pencil and red pencil critiques for any of our members who want to submit a few pages, but that is where Eileen's real skill lies. And then Crystal used to run a publishing company, and she's self-published and is killing the self-publishing world. And I know you've spoken to both of them, so you know people can check in with how clever they are on your podcast.
Well, you guys have a lot of talent, each of you individually, and together I think that the synergy must be amazing.
I just want to say the synergy is amazing with the three of us, but the real synergy comes from all of the engaged members who are participating truly on a daily basis, supporting each other and asking for support when they need it. So it truly is a community that I've not seen anything like it.
And how many people would be in this community at the moment?
At the moment, we have about 75.
Wow, that's a lot of people to be.
It's a lot, but it's amazing how quickly and easily we can develop, and we are developing relationships. Like you get to know people, and it's one of those things that's like, how big do we want to grow, right?
Yeah, because quality versus quantity, Well, I know with me, I have a couple hats to wear, and I sometimes find that hard, because it, you know, like which hat do I get to wear for the next 15 minutes kind of thing. When you go to sleep at night, what are you thinking about usually? Your own writing or your writing community? What is your number one thing to do?
When I go to sleep at night, honestly, I would. okay, that's kind of a hilarious question. You know what? When I lie in bed at night, if I wake up in the middle of the night, I don't talk to myself, I don't think, as either a writer or as a coach. What I do is, if I'm lying in bed awake, it's because somebody lying beside me is snoring. And I lie there wishing that I had psychic powers and I could silence that noise. But then there's this other voice in me that's like, well, I'm truly a woman who loves her husband, so I don't really want to wake up beside a corpse. So maybe I'm glad that I don't have those psychic powers. But really, my inner talk at night is something that it's not productive. It's not productive.
Okay, no. Fair enough. And what are you currently working on?
I'm working on two books. Both of them are nonfiction. One of them is called, well, one of them is Your Shitty First Draft, which is part of a series for the Creative Academy. Wow. And the other one is, it's kind of like, well, it's the evolution of Mother Teresa's Advice for Jilted Lovers, which is the fiction book that I wrote. And this one is called, it's nonfiction, called Girls Who Get Themselves in Trouble, The Unholy Communion of Sex, Religion, and Politics.
Ooh.
And it is it's basically taking, and this comes back to purpose, it's taking all of the themes that I spoke about and wrote about in a dark humor way, in a fictional way, in Mother Teresa's Advice for Jilted Lovers, but I'm going into the history of sexuality and religion and politics and where those things intersect and how it has come to be that women have certain feelings about their sexuality and men have certain feelings about women's sexuality and that society has feels that they have certain rights over women's sexuality and so on. So, and it's going to be humorous because I don't know how to write otherwise.
Well, especially that topic. It's such a hot topic, but with humor, that would be really good.
I hope it'll be good.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. So is that one of the books that's coming out this spring?
No, that one is probably a year out. That's a big one. But Your Shitty First Draft, that one will be coming out in the spring. We're anticipating early April, end of March or early April, and there'll be three released in that series.
Wow, that's going to be, you know, make quite a change getting three books out. So I hope you guys come back and visit me and we can promote those books.
Oh, I think we do too. That would be lovely.
And what is your do you have a latest release to promote as well, or those are the two you want to promote?
The one that I would love to promote is actually the only one that's available. I do have a nonfiction book I wrote in 2003, but that one I don't want to promote at all. Mother Teresa's Advice for Jilted Lovers, that's the one. And so that one's available on Amazon. That would be the one. It's a fun read. I'm delighted that it gets good reviews. It makes people laugh, and that's what I was shooting for.
I can't believe your titles. They're just amazing. So where can people find you?
Probably the best place is just my website, donnabarker.com, because it has links to all the places that I play online. I'm not at all active in social media at all. I had to give that up to be able to produce the number of words that I need to write every day to achieve my publishing goals.
And what are you reading right now?
I am reading a book. It's brilliant. It's a book called Dollars and Sex. And it's by
getting a sex theme.
You know, it's so one thing. Just a little aside. I'm really glad that my husband has no interest in reading what I write because I think he'd be horrified. It's a book by a Canadian PhD economist named Marina Achard, and Dollars and Sex: How Economics Influences Sex and Love. And you think, an economics book, but do we actually have time for me to read the first sentence and the last sentence?
Oh, absolutely.
This is a great example of how to take a nonfiction book and make it, people have to buy it. So the introduction, the very first paragraph is, have you ever wondered if national well-being is higher in countries in which men have larger penises than in those in which men are less well-endowed? Or, the point, does it surprise you to learn that upon discovering the, quote, global penile length distribution map, unquote, that an economist started looking around for an economic question that the data might answer? And then it writes a little bit more, and the very last sentence of that first page is, the resulting body of literature is a collection of theories and evidence that would give anyone, frankly, a hard-on for economics. How do you not buy that book? What a perfect first page for a book
absolutely.
About economics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's what I'm reading, and it's absolutely fascinating.
Well, I can imagine economics has a lot to do with our sexuality. That is fascinating.
It really does, yeah.
So I understand you have a favorite drink that your brother concocted?
He did, and you know what? And I've sent you the recipe, and to get it, it's basically an amaretto, a mock tail. Not big drinkers here, although when he made it for me, I said, Derek, I need a mocktail, and he made it for me, and I went, oh, this will taste really great with rum, wouldn't it?
So much for the mock, huh?
So much for the mock, but I did just drink it with the mock. It's whipping cream and some almond drops, I guess. What is it called? I'm terrible in the kitchen, and my brother is a chef, so I've got this beautiful, beautiful luck. You know, I manifested a couple of years ago having a live-in chef, which is the perfect thing for a person like me. Yes.
Yeah.
The recipe is on your website. It's absolutely delicious.
Oh, that sounds great.
little fattening, but you know,
Well, it's special, right? It's
Special.
not every day. And do you
Exactly.
have, we're running short on time. Do you have a final word?
What I'm going to give you is the quote that has been stuck to my monitor for the last, as long as I can remember. And it's one that I refer to so often. And it's by this author named Steve Furtick. He says, "The reason we struggle with insecurity is because we compare our behind the scenes to everyone else's highlight reel." And that speaks so much to our scrappy rough drafts and how it is that, you know, we struggle so much with getting from the idea in our head to the final version that people get to read. We're just comparing our process to everyone else's final product.
So true, so true.
Thank
Well, thank
you.
you so much for joining me today on Blood, Sweat, and Words. I do hope you come back and talk about your books as they release, and talk more about sex. We can always talk about sex.
Can we? I would love to come back and talk about sex, but I'd like to hear more from you too, because I think, let's hear about someone else's sex life for a change.
Well,
Okay.
yeah. We'll figure it out. So,
All
thanks
right.
again.
Thank you so much, Joanne.
Stay tuned next week for my interview with Sandra Wickham, the woman behind the Creative Ink Festival for Readers and Writers in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Thanks for listening. Now it's your turn. What do you think about today's episode? I'd love to hear from you. You can leave comments on my podcast website, bloodsweatandwords.com, or email me directly, bloodsweatandwords@gmail.com. Your input is valuable to me. It helps me create a better show. Want to know more about the podcast? Go to my website, bloodsweatandwords.com, and sign up for my short weekly newsletter, which contains information about the current episode, gives two writing tips, and a note about what I'm reading and thinking about. When you sign up, you get a free nonfiction book, How to Write Short Bios. On those darker days, do you ever wonder if your story has any value? I leave you today with these words. Quote, "Writing in a diary is a really strange experience for someone like me, not only because I've never written anything before, but also because it seems to me that later on, neither I nor anyone else will be interested in the musings of a 13-year-old girl." Anne Frank. See between the lines.